Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello, everybody.
Watcher.
We're back.
We're back. We got a list. We got some things on the list.
Some games were played.
Talk about them and all sorts of rock and roll.
Do you want to get started?
All right. No, I'll start with the rock and roll then.
Let me guess. Planetside.
It's Planetside 2. Yes. Planetside 2. Carrying on there with five rounds rapid. We're in there quite a lot. I'm starting to worry about burnout a bit. Not saying I'm experiencing it yet, but it can't be right to be playing this much MMO this often, this regularly.
And there it is. Now I want to play Burnout Paradise again.
Yeah, I mean, it's all fine at the moment. I mean, there's been some hard sessions in there, some quite harsh evenings. I mean, the big problem is that for some reason on Miller server, EU, the Vanu sovereignty typically peak at about 28% of the population instead of the expected 33%.
Well, the reason why that is, is everyone saw that you had picked that side and you know how you love to be on the... losing side.
Well, not on purpose. I just think
it always happens, though, doesn't
more
it?
Fun when the sides are balanced.
And so they all got together and decided to do this.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a couple of reasons. I'm going to have to explore this more thoroughly in blog posting throughout the week, I'm sure.
Is it the same on other servers?
I don't know. I'll have to actually go and do a bit more research, find out, because of this big Planetside Players website, you can go and look all that stuff up anytime you want. So I shall go away and do that. But I think it's either the stupid purple latex wetsuits, which I think are driving hardcore first-person battlefield shooter people away.
On the other hand, they are attracting other hardcore people.
The wrong sort of hardcore people, I'm sure, yes. Yeah, I mean, the Terran Republic and the NC, they look like soldiers. I don't know what our lot look like. They look like sort of weird frogmen,
do they look
scuba
like
diver
enemies
troopers
from an 80s sci-fi show?
Probably 90s, I'm thinking.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the look isn't great. I mean, yes, you've got the cool energy weapons and the floaty tanks and all the rest of it, and the scythe looks fantastic compared to the Mosquito and the Reaver, but just the standard infantry clobber that you have to run around in. I posted a picture of Will Ferrell from the first Austin Powers film earlier in the week, and I think if we looked like that, we'd have no problem recruiting at all. The old fez, the dark glasses, the sharp grey suit. Yeah. But no, so I don't know what that is. I think part of it is Fourth Empire problems. Now, in any discussion of Planetside, you'll hear the term Fourth Empire. Planetside obviously has three empires. Fourth Empire is a sort of derogatory term that's used to describe people who just go to whichever side's winning at the time. Because it lets you create multiple characters on different empires on the same server.
I believe the term came from World War II.
Possibly, yes. Fifth Column or something. I don't know.
No, Fourth Empire was the people who just picked the battle that they went to.
Yeah. Damn those mercenaries. But so, and what's happened recently, I think there was some sort of problem with the Mag Rider when it launched, which meant that although it's a hover tank, so you'd expect a bit of leeway on terrain, it would have a certain maximum hill it could climb when going forwards. But if you strafed sideways, it totally ignored the steepness of any hill that you ever came across.
Nope.
Bit overpowered. I'm probably one of the first to agree, but that did lead to the Vanu developing a certain expectation of being able to sit on top of any hill or cliff side and just artillery bomb with the big main gun from the tank onto wherever they so pleased. But that's been fixed and tweaked and so on. I think they may have been overfixed, you know, the typical buff nerf cycle as it goes. And I think that's driven quite a lot of people who want an easier time of it off to other empires. I don't know. I'm seeing TR seem to be the beneficiaries of the Fourth Empire at the moment. I don't know what they've got that we haven't. Their Prowler seems pretty hardcore. They're big tank. But that's just, you know, bitter speaking on the receiving end of large shelling all the time. But so what tends to happen with 28%, you do start to feel it. You do your empire does start to get pushed back quite a lot. There always tends to be more of them in a fight than you, which
it's always a target rich.
So well, yes, we get the XP bonuses and all that sort of thing, resource allocation bonuses, but that's only some small substitute for a fair fight where you've got an equal number of people on each side. So most of the activity seems to concentrate on Indar, which seems to cap out at 33. I think there's some kind of empire lock involved there, just So basically, if everyone piles on it, all sides will eventually become equal on that one. Esamir and Amarish are both hard work, though. They tend to be entirely blue or entirely red most of the time these days. But again, target-rich environment. We try and push out sometimes, but it is hard work. And I'm trying to sort of, you know, not get too demoralised by that, not keep pushing the squad straight into it over and over and hoping something breaks, but because it's likely to be us. Need to mix it up with a bit of easy work now and then as well, just to keep the certs moving forward, to keep the progression going, really. Keep the morale up as well. I've written something in every slot there. Yes, I'm spending my points quite randomly at the moment. I think, what did I buy? I bought some airframe upgrade for the Liberator, which is something I hadn't really bothered with before, but seems quite useful as a small squad air option.
Okay.
When perhaps an entire galaxy is a bit overkill for three people. I got some front armour for the Mag Rider. I don't know why. I went straight out and got rocket spammed from above by a Reaver, so I probably should have got the top armour for the for the Mag Rider. That would be the next thing to buy.
Does it have top armour?
Yeah, well, you've got a choice. It's one slot. You can have the front armour, you can have the top armour, or you can have the side armours. And there's a few other bits and pieces that would also occupy similar slots. And you've got to make your choice. And front armour is 5% against front impacts. Obviously, if you're in a towing it, you know, toe-to-toe with tanks, lobbing shells at each other, then that's a useful thing. But it doesn't protect you much from death from above, which is an increasingly large problem in that game. I'm looking forward to the first round of air cavalry nerfs. But, so trying to get a bit, just something in every slot for every vehicle and every weapon, so that you don't have blank slots, because that's wasted opportunity. And then obviously stuff that works well for me, because I'm trying to use a bit of everything. I was even using the Flash this week, which was a bit of a crazy kamikaze run just to get from A to B.
Is that wise?
Well, it can be pimped up pretty hardcore, and I think next game update it's going to get the Wraith subsystem, which will allow it to cloak along with your cloaky infiltrator suit, which is something from the first game, giving you a sort of somewhat, well, it's still making noise and you'll still see it ghosting, but gives you a somewhat clandestine method of getting around the map at high speed if you're a dedicated sneaky type. So that might be interesting. But apparently the real cool thing to do with the Flash is to give it the 200 meter proximity radar. That way, when you barrel up to a base and park it in the side of a building, as long as it doesn't actually explode, it's there doing incredibly powerful positional enemy spotting for you. So if you see someone coming up in a Flash, do make sure you kill the Flash, even though the bloke's got off it and legged it, because the Flash is still helping him.
And now I've got green stuck in my head.
Ah, yeah, saviour of the universe. Another cool trick I heard somebody telling me about was if you stick some C4 to the front of your own Flash and then drive it towards the enemy, leap off and press the button, the Flash becomes something of a guided land torpedo.
Bonus.
Well, yeah, I know. That's more of a light assault trooper type trick, really. But engineers get access to the C4, so I might have to get that at some point. I still haven't got the C4 unlocked yet. I think next thing I want to go towards is sticky grenades. There's an empty slot on my loadout there. Normal grenades can be upgraded to become sticky grenades, which means they'll just stick and attach to the first thing
you throw them. I love sticky grenades.
I know. Just having them bounce all over the place and go bounce straight out the window and stuff is quite frustrating, especially since these are the big grenades that you have to spend inventory resource on. So anything you can do to make them a bit more controllable is quite useful. Mostly this week I've been using my Eidolon, the battle rifle I was gushing about the other week, to just do some sniping. It's been very therapeutic. Stay way, way back. You've got your 6x scope on whatever Empire battle rifle. I think it's the Warden for the NC and the AMR-66 for the TR. I've got a blog post about it. both of those guns will also function very similarly to the Eidolon, which is an engineer's gun that can shoot from about a quarter of a mile away and get reliable headshots and all sorts. A bit hectic inside buildings, it has to be said, but I'm starting to get the hang of that as well, which is basically firing it from the hip, tap, 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 rather than holding it down and spraying. And if you manage to plink him in the head enough, you can actually survive circle strafey face-to-face battles as
well.
Not the ideal choice for an indoor weapon, but I just like sniping, but don't like the design of the sniper class in Planetside 2, if you see what I mean. But this allows me to do some degree of sniping as an engineer, which is my favourite class, so that's all good. You've written something on my column there. You've written hack. This is the pro Seaborn sat losing all their account details.
Yes.
Blimey, how long did that take?
A couple of weeks.
A couple of months, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, See, it was really irrational at the time. I desperately didn't want to be a ProSieben Sat 7 customer because I wanted to carry on with Sony. Because yes, all right, they've been hacked in the past, but you know the damage has been done, and at least they've all got my details. And that's one. It would be one less extra company. And I'd heard bad rumours, entirely not based in any kind of evidence or fact at all. This is just, you know, internet hearsay, saying that ProSieben Sat weren't very good at security and so on. And I just thought, well, you know, I shouldn't believe this stuff because that's just bandwagoning, knee-jerk stuff. And yet here we are.
Apparently it's true.
With me sort of telling myself I told myself so, or something. I don't know. But yes. So, yeah, there we go. Yet the latest in an increasingly common thing where they lose all your password details and everything. If anyone listening is ProSieben Sat 7 customer, I imagine you've had your emails about changing your passwords by now. Do make sure you do that. But what's to stop this happening again? I don't know. What can we do? Not play at all, I suppose, is your only recourse, really. I'm just quite glad I'm still a station customer and didn't have to do all that. So
Got around to making that account.
Yeah, quite.
Although, ever since I've started using 1Password, all my passwords are very secure and unique.
1Password is a system?
It's an app which you can run, and it will generate your passwords on the fly and then save them behind
I've come up with a system which is not immediately intuitive that I do in my head to generate new passwords for every application I use, which is useful. But you need some way of remembering and chaining it all together.
Yeah, that's why I like 1Password.
You can't just come up with entirely random passwords for everything you do, otherwise your brain breaks.
Yeah, it means my computer's got a list stored away in a nice little... a protected file.
Okay, as long as that computer doesn't die in some fashion.
That computer is backed up.
I have a book. I have an actual
books are good.
Paper book.
People
with,
mock
with ink
having
in it.
Books,
a
but book, yeah. The risk to your password is not somebody getting to your computer. It's somebody on the internet. Somebody getting to your computer, that doesn't matter. That's almost irrelevant.
Well, you've been burgled at that point, and you've got all sorts of insurance claims and covers and all the rest of it.
But... So I've seen people, you can buy books, which are My Little Password book type. No, they are actually a good idea. Security professionals
recommend
them.
Well, just any old diary or notebook or something, and keep it in a safe place, write some stuff down. Don't write, this is my big password book on the cover or anything, and don't keep it directly next to the PC. But apart from that, that's a good way of keeping track of it all. But it is absolutely important to have a different password for as many systems as you can. Don't have one word to rule them all.
No, you should never use the password twice.
Because that password is only as strong as the weakest system you apply it
to. Although I do actually have a password which I use in a lot of places, but that's for throwaway accounts that I never get any personal data.
It's about risk management. But so I'm not quite sure. Obviously, I don't suppose they'll tell you what precisely the ugly details of the fallout of what actually happened. But there we go. Nothing's safe, really. Just have to make informed guesses and informed assessments of the risks involved. Let's talk about something else. I'm going to talk about Guns of Icarus Online.
Okay,
so this, I'd never heard of this thing before at all. Some mistaken on Twitter there recommended it to me, and I went and had a look. It's on Steam. Apparently it was a Kickstarter thing about some stuff. There's a Guns of Icarus, which is not online, which was a sort of prequel. It's a sort of adventure, and it's basically you as a steampunk captain of a Zeppelin in a steampunk future. And
What more could you want?
I've written all my life ... there. Yes, all of my life I've wanted nothing more than to be a captain of a Zeppelin in Victorian skies, and now I can be. And it's there, and it's quite fun. So the basic setup for Guns of Icarus Online is you're a captain. It's essentially a lobby-based team PvP type of thing.
Don't like it.
Yeah, well, we'll come to that. Where you and three of your friends are aboard one of the several models of flying Zeppelin with cannons all along the side and engines
on the
back. So
if there's four of you, one of you is the captain.
Right, well, one of you, this is the cool thing. It is actually pretty cool. You each pick a role before you join the lobby or whatever, and presumably you can manually set that up if you're doing it with friends. You need a captain, a pilot, who actually flies the boat.
Okay.
And you need an engineer who goes around fixing all the bits and pieces on the boat, and you need a gunner who run around using all the cannons on the deck to shoot at people. And then you have one other as well, and presumably, well, obviously two pilots isn't going to help because there's only one pilot station, but typically that would be another gunner or another engineer, depending on how you work it. And you're actually there on the deck of this flying Zeppelin balloon gondola thing. There's all railings everywhere, and there's various different stations around the thing. There's a load of different guns all facing different ways. You can equip the different guns before setup. The captain of the boat gets to do that. There's a ship's wheel with the speed gauge on the side there, the little lever for speed and so on.
And who actually sets the speed after you move that?
Whoever's using the pilot station uses the wheel and the speed.
The wheel doesn't do anything.
It does.
The wheel signals down to the engine room.
No,
the
it's not. They're not that elaborate. No, it's all connected through magical steampunk steam. Yeah,
no,
I imagine
that's not very realistic.
Yeah, it's not very realistic, and that's great. And then the engineer's left with running around on the deck with a variety of different spanners, fixing bits of the boat that get blown up when you're shot at by other zeppelins. And there's like a balloon engine thing. There's the main hull engine thing that you run around, and also various different actual motive engines on the back as well. And you can run around repairing those, rebuilding them when they get destroyed. You can buff them with a different sort of spanner, and there's a fire extinguisher as well. They keep getting put on fire by various incendiary shot used by the gunners and so on. It's a lot of fun, actually, the basic concept. And you're supposed to work as a team of four to make your balloon zeppelin gondola thing a fighting vessel of huge efficiency and potency.
Sounds like flying the Falcon in Galaxies.
Yes, exactly that. Anyone who remembers Star Wars Galaxies and who remembers Jump to Light Speed, it wasn't just the Falcon. I think the top-end ships on the Imperial and Rebel sides also got a multi-crew ship thing. That wasn't so good, though. I mean, the Falcon was quite good. You had a person who flew it, and then there were the two well gunners with the turrets on the top and bottom. And then some poor bugger had to run around inside trying to patch up plasma pipes, which would invariably keep exploding and killing everyone.
I spent a lot of time doing that.
Yeah, this is a much better... It's a similar kind of system. It is a similar sort of gameplay, but much better thought out, much more well conceived as well. You basically have to pull together as a team to make the whole thing work, make your ship deadly and shoot down the enemy boats. It usually takes place in matches of like two boats versus two boats, so there'll be eight on each side, four of you in each boat. It does seem locked at four. It has the option of slotting AI members of the crew as well, who will run around and repair things and shoot at targets.
That doesn't sound
mark.
Quite as good.
Obviously it's not letting its full potential there, but it's useful to fill an extra slot, or if you wanted to try a bit of practice solo stuff, you can set up matches against the AI and so on. But it's essentially a lobby game, a bit like World of Tanks and that kind of ilk. And of course it's got the quick join button.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and this is where it all went wrong. I've written Pug Idiots Retard Spanners. Yes. If someone else calls me a retard for using the wrong spanner to try and fix part of that boat, I don't know what I'm going to do, but it's going to be apocalyptic. I may just sit in. Well, you can't really grief your own boat, but I could just stand there doing nothing, I suppose.
That would grief them.
Which would grief them, yeah. It's the old pickup group problem, isn't it? There's me on my first sort of three or four goes at this ever, dropping straight into the hectic fray and surrounded by people with no empathy or understanding or compassion or no patience. And so they just run in there, start flying around shooting stuff and wondering why it's me trying to work out, oh God, what do I do with this engine thing? And yes, you can imagine the tolerance exhibited. Yeah. It's that kind of thing. It's a fantastic, brilliant world. I mean, the production values are nice and high. It's got that that sort of Victorian film grain filter applied over the top of it all the time, which lends it a certain style. The boats are gorgeous and really well designed. It's not hugely graphically intensive. The actual avatars are a bit middle of the road detail-wise. The clouds and the sunsets and the sort of air spaces you're flying your ships around in, the clouds are really dense, and you have to... The part of your job, of everyone's job, is using a spyglass to highlight people that you see. It will then bracket them for other people on your boat to be able to aim at. But yeah, you can shake people by flying into clouds. There's a fantastic desert sandbox type level where you can just practice with on your own with a boat and running around it and so on, flying it about a bit. But some of the maps are absolutely breathtaking, and it really is a lot of fun. But of course, it's such a frantic, hectic... You know, silent judgment of three random strangers as I try and run around with the spanners. I've mostly been trying the engineer thing, which I'm fast seeing is the healer of the operation. It's, as an engineer, it's your job to try and keep the boat repaired, keep healing it by using spanners on the various different control points and so on. And it's always the healer's fault when the team dies. Of course, universal truth. So I suppose the gunners are your DPS, and I don't know if the pilot equates to the tank. You have to move the boat around. I don't know. Not quite the same sort of thing. But yeah, a lot of people get very angry with engineers and stuff. I've learned almost immediately that no one wants you to bring the buff spanner with you, because apparently that's not very good. It's a waste of time. You should use the right tools to keep the repairs going, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I'm looking forward to trying it with some friends, actually.
Well, some nice people.
Some nice people, yes. Much like our Five Rounds Rapid and our friends on Mumble and so on. I got a four-pack. It's on Steam. It was $24.99 for four passes. So you basically buy a bundle of four. So I might have to come up with some sort of competition or something to hand out some of those. Trouble is, I got this weird thing where I'm not allowed to give them away for a calendar month because Steam wants my account to be in good standing for something, blah, blah, rules, regulations. I can't just immediately buy a four pack and dish out three of them. I have to wait a month before I'm allowed to give out the other three for some bizarre reason.
I have no idea.
No, I'm not quite sure what's gone on there at all, to be honest. But the basic pack is quite cheap, though. I think it's only like 10 quid or something. For a single one, then there's an expanded one that you get excellent captain's coats and things with, and then this top one. But because part of what attracted me to the thing, I mean, apparently it was a Kickstarter, and apparently there is a single player game called Guns of Icarus, which I've also know nothing about, which perhaps I should have a look and perhaps might find more satisfying. But I love the concept of the multiplayer thing because it absolutely is the top end ship flying from jump to light speed, only not in space, obviously. It's in clouds and you're in a Victorian Zeppelin instead. But there was a lot of talk in there about an adventure mode, which isn't in yet, because I think the whole project is quite an indie thing and quite Kickstartered and so on. But eventually, I gather there's going to be some sort of adventure mode, which will be a bit more PvE, a bit more persistent, a bit more take your crew out on journeys across this fantastic world that so far has only been hinted at so far, you know?
That could be fun.
Yeah, so I'm going to definitely watch that space. But I think the basic gameplay seems quite fun as well. If you can get a decent crew of friends together to get up there and pick out a decent boat and we'll work together on your various tasks. Trouble is that I've done the random join thing and it's very easy to fail and get it badly wrong because you need if you join into a team that doesn't have one of each of the classes, you're screwed.
Yeah.
If you join into a team where the bloke who's signed up for flying the thing doesn't immediately go and start flying the thing, you're screwed because you're basically a sitting duck. I think the last one I joined in, no one was shooting anything. Everyone was busy flying it or running around with spanners.
Is that a problem?
Well, they'll kill you in the end. You still need to be shooting back, even if you're... Because I don't think you can realistically out-repair incoming broadsides for very long. It's more of a sort of balance issue. And of course, if no one's running around with the spanners, you're dead because nothing gets repaired and you die immediately. So there's so many ways for four random strangers to completely not get on very well and not work together in the correct way. So I think this is the sort of thing that is going to become quite frustrating quite quickly if all you ever do is pick up group random join in it.
Guns of Icarus 1 did not get reviewed well.
Oh, okay. The Metacritic's not particularly high on this one, people citing bugs and so on. I don't know how long Guns of Icarus Online's been out before. It has a feel of a sort of almost there, not quite beta. I think it does feel, it feels launched, but...
The original Guns of Icarus, GameSpot UK, one of the first reviews I found, you know, not the most reputable.
Yeah.
This overly simple shooting gallery is a rip-off.
Nice I soundtrack. See, so I presume... Yeah, the soundtrack is good. A lot of Victorian string quartet-y stuff. I think it's got a lot of potential, so I'm willing to put a few quid down on it and see where it goes. But I think, yeah, as it stands, I think you're going to need to go in there with friends or get driven out of it quite quickly because of just the sheer nature of pickup grouping and the interdependence that each role on each ship requires. You know, everyone needs to be on the ball. Everybody needs to be knowing what they're doing. But I just found it just a fascinating aesthetic as well. It's all very, very sort of walnut and brass everywhere and all very steampunky. So I just quite like the sound of that as well. So I think, yeah, I'd recommend a look, but with provisos. You know, you want to probably go in there with an established group of friends rather than just jump in and experience the full horror of pickup grouping. Because the consequences of bad pickup grouping seem to be quite exaggerated and multiplied in the format they've gone with here. So, yeah, I played an Android game that I liked.
Wow.
Yeah, I found one. Yeah, called Puzzle Forge.
Okay, and how does that do it?
It's your sort of standard block matching three items together to turn into something else type of
So far, so generic.
Yep. You got this grid, and the grid is theoretically your forge. You're a blacksmith, and you've got all sorts of adventurers and town guards coming your way for new weapons and equipment, and you have to try and build them using the grid. And you can basically choose at any given time to put a piece of ore on the grid or a mould on the grid. So if you put three pieces of ore together in a straight line or in an L shape, they'll turn into the next grade of ore up, and you three of those go into the next grade and so on and so on. You can put two pieces of the same ore of any grade together and a mould next to them, and that mould then becomes a part that's filled with that sort of ore. You put three particular parts together and that becomes an item, a sword, a shield, some armour or a spade or whatever. Surprisingly complicated for a match three in a row type game, and I found myself really sort of quite absorbed with the basic gameplay of it all. Apparently there's, you collect gold coins and you can buy upgrades and all the rest of it, and of course you can cash shop for extra gold coins to shortcut all that, but the basic matching three game is fascinating. Once you've created, successfully forged an item, those squares get glowing red hot and you can't use them until they cool down, so they take a number of turns to come back into use, and sometimes heroes will come along in a hurry and you'll only have X number of turns to create the item for them, but you can usually get away with making a very low quality item quite quickly with those. And it's just really simple and really addictive and compelling.
It's on Android, so it's probably a rip-off of another game.
I don't know. I'd not seen anything like it. I suppose thematically it's a bit like Puzzle Quest, where you're using a match-so-many-in-a-row type gameplay to be carrying out abstract RPG concepts. In Puzzle Quest, obviously, you're playing the matching game to beat monsters for some reason. You know, you find the enemy monster in a hideous cave, you draw your weapon, and you both sit down and play a tile game, and then the loser goes away. Whereas here, it's like the crafting game. I think it's nothing nearly as complex as Tale in the Desert or anything like that. But as it's just a standard, fun little berry 5 minutes matching three game, I like it a lot. I like it. It's not intrusive. There's not huge amounts of adverts everywhere. There are adverts, obviously. You can pay to get rid of them. But you don't need to cash shop a load of stuff. You can just keep tinkering away with the basic gameplay of it all, which is the thing. Which is the thing that makes a lot of these mobile device games rubbish, is that the basic gameplay is a bit boring.
Yes, that is very true. It has to be a good game.
And you're paying to unlock the ability to not have to do the game, which is just stupid. Whereas this, I can't see why I'd want to give them any money, but I feel I ought to because I'm quite enjoying it. And I was just really surprised because I'm increasingly finding that almost everything in the Google Play Android store is junk, and it's just, I'm sort of starting to lose the will to live to wade through it all as well. There's pages and pages of this stuff.
Yeah, the trick is to
find
the good
rubbish,
stuff.
Mostly.
And it's the same on the iPhone.
Mm.
There are some gems in there.
Very similar market,
them.
Yeah. Okay, I've written Ingress is bollocks there. Yes, I got an invite to Ingress in the end.
Huzzah!
Hooray! I finally can take part in this edgy, hidden world ARG thing for Android-y phones. And so that started off, well, quite badly. It was buggy and broken. Apparently a known issue with the HTC One S is that you have to turn off wireless and turn on the GPS satellites, which drain your battery quite quickly, in order for it to work through the tutorial. If you don't, it will do something wrong with wireless and just go black, entirely black screen.
That's what I like to see.
Yep.
High quality control.
So I managed to choke my way through the tutorials there. And basically, gameplay of Ingress is that there are two factions, the Shapers and the Enlightened, something like that. The blue team and the green team, who are fighting for control of minds, the minds of all of us, and you as well, dear listener. And to do that, you first of all have to charge up your bar with XM, which is exotic matter. Do you see what they've done there?
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Yes, it's
okay.
Not very good.
So that represents itself on your handheld device. So you've got basically the Google Street Maps overlay. It's black with the sort of blue streets overlaid over the top. And on top of that are these little flecks of points of light. And if you get within about 50 meters of one, it draws it in. And you can basically gain that as energy, and your bar basically fills up, and then you do nothing at all, because apparently it involves portals, and I've never seen one yet.
How could you not have seen a portal?
I don't know. I saw one in the tutorial, but those weren't real portals. Those were just pretend training simulation portals, which other people can't see. Anyway, so apparently, scattered around, well, from what I gather, mostly hipster coffee shops in Seattle, these portals, and you can claim the portals using your XM by planting resonators around them and launching an XMP pulse thing, and then you have to fortify them with some other things that you can place, and also by hacking the portals you gain objects that are useful, portal keys, resonators, etc. And the idea is that you're supposed to claim and fortify a portal, then you claim and fortify another portal some distance away, then you can link them together. What that does is that draws a blue or green line between the two.
Yeah.
Then you find a third one, and if you link that one to the previous, each of the previous two, the triangle underneath becomes an area of control, a sort of field, and that then is a blue area or a green area. And whoever's got the most green or blue area worldwide is the team that's winning. And I don't know what happens at that point because I don't feel very included. I found I went for a bit of a walk. It tricked me into some exercise while I was initially charging up my XM bar there. Actually went for a walk I wouldn't otherwise have done. And I found a green line. And the other side of the green line was a green, wobbly, yeah, fieldy area. And I stood at this green line and I looked left and I looked right and I thought the portals at each end of this line could be hundreds, if not thousands, of miles away. And I have absolutely no way of knowing. So, I don't know, I crossed the green line and there was some wibbly stuff on the other side. I noticed that a huge amount of XM was in my local secondary school, but this was 10:30 at night and I didn't feel very comfortable breaking into a school in the middle of the night.
Understandable.
Yeah, yeah, or during the day. Just a bad idea. Schools, stay away, yeah. I don't understand why so much of this bobbly matter appears in schools. I suppose it's because they want to get the hipster kids involved or something, I don't know.
Possibly.
I imagine if I was stood at school where, with one of these devices staring at imaginary portals in the playground, I'd get the absolute bejesus kicked out of me, to be honest, and my phone stolen and thrown on a roof. And then I'd probably be thrown on a roof as well, but I'm much bigger
and
nowadays.
Then the adults would get there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm much taller nowadays, so no one throws me on a roof in a very long time. But the point being, childhood psychosis. The point being is it's not very fun because I just have no idea where these portals are. I initially thought that if you could farm enough of this XM stuff, you'd have some mechanism by where you could create portals, which would then be shared by everyone. But no. The portals are entirely seeded by Google, as far as I can tell. And I have no idea. I've yet to see one. I've been to work and home, and I've been to your house, and I've been a place that wasn't either of those three, and I haven't found a portal in any of those either. So I just thought, well, if I want to get involved with this, I could go on a massive road trip. It works when you're on the phone, but of course it works in a car, but of course if the power saving means you have to keep tapping the screen every now and then, which is extremely dangerous on the motorway.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen people on forums saying how they harvest vast amounts of this XM stuff by just having some sort of disable power savey thing running, and then they just take long car journeys. And I thought, well, I don't want to spend, like, you know, 70 or 80 quid in petrol and so I spend a whole day just going to London or somewhere so that I can tap a thing and gain a point in a game I don't care about. It's just not really engaging me, to be honest, because I live in the Sticks, apparently. The Sticks being a town with about 100,000... residents, you know,
in the main commuter belt for London.
Yeah, exactly, in the sort of M3 corridor, you know. I mean, you'd expect more of this stuff to be out and about there, but I don't know if I'm missing some clue or some way of determining where a nearby portal is. You can't zoom out very far, that's the thing. You can zoom out and you can see probably about half a kilometer at most, maybe less. And yeah, fine. And once your little bar of XM is charged up, you can't collect anymore. So that just leaves you unable to do anything at all until you find somewhere to use this XM. And I haven't found a portal yet because everything runs off portals.
This sounds like brilliant design.
It is a beta. So I don't know if they're just, you know...
I think by beta you're meant to have put something in the game.
Well, yeah, I don't know if they're using the metrics from the beta to populate what will become the full game. I don't know. Perhaps there'll be more portals near me because they know that an active player lives somewhere in that area. But I don't know. I imagine it's huge fun for William Gibson wannabes who spend most of their time in Seattle coffee shops or San Francisco or whatever. But in terms of the average everyday listener, like you, dear listener, who probably doesn't live in London, correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's not going to be a lot in this game for you. I imagine it's all in... they've got a sort of faction chat thing on the bottom. There's a little tab you slide up and you can slide along the top. There's a range slider.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the smallest range, the finger quotes local chat for my faction, is a range of 20 kilometres.
Anyone in that range?
It's one or two people. It reminds me of the sort of dim and distant past when I was at university. I had a friend who was really into the CB radio scene, you know.
Yeah.
This was back before Twitter and the internet revolutionised it.
Mobile
everything.
Phones, even.
Maybe, yeah, mobile phones gave us functional telepathy anywhere in the world, you know. You basically had just like 20 or so shared radio bands that people in cars would sometimes chirp up on. And it did have a feel of a sort of random pickup chat room. And you'd start to recognise people and names. But I just, this whole ingress thing, I don't know. It sort of reminded me of geocaching a bit, except with less grubbing around in hedges, but less certainty that there was anything out there. At least with geocaching, you're going to find a Tupperware box somewhere.
Geocaching without the thrill and excitement of finding
not actually
something.
Finding anything, yeah. So all in all, ingress is bollocks.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about, because I, yeah.
Yes, we had, because
cause I was
we
doing,
went to lunch the other way, day, and you were demonstrating
I was
this
showing off
wonderful game, and you said it was a rip-off of a game called Shadow Cities on the iPhone.
I'd done a bit of research, and apparently there's something called, yeah, people making comments about Ingress were going, oh, it's just a rip-off of Shadow Cities on the iPhone, so I mentioned that to you.
Which, like a red rag to a bull, I had to then download and play while walking
yeah,
to lunch.
Yeah, I nearly lost you into traffic a couple of times there, I had to keep... Sort of, you know,
but yes,
reminding you.
It's a very similar thing. You have a map, it uses your current location.
Yeah.
But there are creatures running around that you have to fight with spells.
That sounds vastly more engaging and interesting
which
than my
you
thing.
Fight by drawing the right rune on the screen.
What, gesture casting?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you also have these portals that you need to capture by taking off things called dominators, which other people put up on them, which are basically towers.
Yeah.
Which gather resources.
That's like your resonators on the portals in Ingress, yeah.
And then you set your own ones up, and then you have to harvest them every so often by casting another spell.
Right. So it sounds...
And there are campaigns which last a week or so.
Okay.
And at the end of each week, a faction wins or loses.
That sounds fantastic compared to what I got, which was basically Google Street Maps, but with no names on it.
Slight problem.
Yeah.
One, the first day I got it, the campaign ended that evening.
Oh, okay. Well, that's just
unfortunate. And I came 24th on my side.
Only what in the entire world?
I don't know, but it was quite dramatic.
Right.
And also the game is utterly boring.
Right.
It is utterly, utterly dull. I can kill creatures to get XP for whatever reason.
I don't quite understand. I mean, I suppose the idea is to get you out and about out of your gaming chair a bit and a bit of exercise, but there's a lot of stuff out there that already works with pedometers.
Well,
and
this
so
one
on.
Doesn't need you to get out and about, really, because the stuff just spawns around you and your mana recharges so slowly that you might as well just put it down, do something else, come back 2 minutes later,
is
and then do it again.
Is the stuff procedural, or would other people be able to see it with their own phones, or was it just appearing for you?
I don't know about the creatures, but definitely the towers, because people can attack them.
Okay. I don't know, yeah. So yours at least works and is a bit more engaging, but you're not seeing... I mean, I'm sort of slightly... I'm still mystified by the basic gameplay because I haven't been able to do any of it yet. But assuming it was working as intended and there were portals conveniently around my life, I wonder, I think it would be an interesting thing.
It's not a good game.
Not a good game.
It lacks that bit of fun.
Yeah.
And, well, it's my general opinion about all ARG games. They always tend to be a bit rubbish.
Yeah, it's the first... We grabbed on the first thing that came to mind when we saw that there was this particular technology available on this particular platform. But
one of the more interesting ones was a tower defense game based on Crackdown on Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Which I talked about a couple of years ago now.
I vaguely remember that, yeah.
Where it would use Bing Maps to have people coming along roads towards where you were.
Mm.
And that was quite interesting. And you could pick anywhere on the planet as well. but that really didn't do much with ARG apart from using real world maps, which is not quite the same thing, I don't think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've never seen a game which is good for it.
I'm just sort of trying to imagine what I'd get out of it if I were able to play this game properly, and I think it is very gimmicky. It's oh, that's a cool, interesting thing, and then you just, the novelty wears off very quickly. I can't imagine anyone dedicatedly sort of plugging away at this thing for months and months and years.
I bet people do.
Maybe.
Yeah, it just really, I don't know. I've struggled. I've tried to find the fun, but I'd rather be clicking cows or something.
Well, games as
they
games,
have more
yeah.
engaging gameplay than these, which is not saying much.
Trying to shoehorn a real-world map into stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much all I've done this week. Anyway, what else have you been up to?
I've played a couple of iPhone games.
Okay.
First one is a game called Rock Runners.
Rock Runners, okay.
Which is one of those run along as long as you can type games, but not as long as you can. The levels are a finite length and you have to complete the levels.
Well, I quite like Temple Run 2, but in general, the genre seems a bit futile to me.
This is a level-based game with goals.
Okay.
You have to, on each level, you've got this hex-based map, which you have to cross a level at a time.
Yeah.
And you need to pick up a power core for your ship, get to your ship, and fly off to the next map.
Okay. So far, so good.
And it's quite good. You run along, you have the usual, it's click to jump, and tap to use a swingy thing.
Mm.
So if you get near a swingy point, you can hold it and it will swing along in an arc, and you've got to collect gems along the way.
Okay.
And it's actually quite fun. I'm really enjoying playing it.
Right.
It looks good.
Yep.
And some of the levels are quite hard, and you learn how to do them. And there is it has that feeling of skill when you manage to actually, if you're doing, say, a swing and you don't get it quite right, you won't get all of the starters. So if you get it right, there's a skill there.
Yeah, replayability.
Yeah.
So honing and perfecting.
So what we've got here is we've got a determined end game, which is completing all of the missions, and the ability to use skill to play better.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Excellent.
I like it.
Yeah.
Everything you need to make a fun game.
Good work.
And so I recommend that. It's on iPhone. I don't know about the others. It just came out, I think.
Right.
And the other game I've played, because it's been one of those weeks, is TikTok Toys.
Oh, what's that?
This is a BAFTA game, a one-to-watch winning game.
Oh, okay.
And it finally released this week.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yesterday, I think, and because it's the BAFTAs tonight as we're recording.
Okay.
The game BAFTAs, that is, which is actually a respected thing.
It is.
It's the BAFTA.
Yeah.
And we America has the VGAs, we have the BAFTAs. We win. Actually, no, we're saying
different
that
sort of audience, maybe.
Saying that the VGAs was actually not quite as bad as it could have been last year.
Okay.
So it's a puzzle game where you've got this little wind-up robot who follows a path, and you have to move things out of the way. So there will be toys in the way, there'll be wooden blocks that need moving, or toy trains that need moving, and you have to work out what order to move them away at what times and how fast to get through the level. And it should be brilliant.
Yeah.
It's not quite brilliant so far yet.
Oh, here we go.
I don't know why. It's just not engaging me properly at the moment.
It sounds like, I don't know, not complex enough. I don't know. I haven't played it, but there are not enough elements to gameplay there.
I think the problem is, I'm playing it on the iPad, and it feels like it's designed for the phone. So everything seems big, and yet it does feel like the levels don't have a lot on them at the moment. And I'm sure it gets better
maybe
the more I get
up
in, because I'm still on the tutorial one, because it came out yesterday.
Ramp up the difficulty as it goes.
But it's not engaging me enough so far to get past it and into the good stuff. There's some brilliant ideas in there, and it looks gorgeous. And there are little xylophones you can play.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just not grabbing me. I don't understand what they've missed or what I'm missing.
I'm going to
keep playing. I'm going to keep going at it. It was after award winning, so, you know, it must have a certain amount of snobbishness.
Oh, fair enough. I'll see what they're all thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. It doesn't have that aspect of fun that other games have. So, can't really recommend that at the moment, but it's free anyway for the first couple of levels anyway, so you can take a look. What else? Because that's it for the games I played, because I have no internet still.
You've still got no internet?
No, don't.
Oh, good grief.
I miss
grief.
My internet.
You're in danger of becoming cured if you're not careful.
SimCity's out.
Yes, and that's an always-on DRM, so you can't play it without internet.
Play it. And I'm not going to buy it anyway when it comes out, because it's always-on DRM, and I understand now how fragile internet is.
How do you need another SimCity when you've got, like, four versions already?
I want a good-looking SimCity in high-res.
Fair enough. SimCity 4 wasn't bad, was it?
It looked okay, but I didn't like all of the bollocking around with sewers.
That's the basic gameplay. What are you expecting?
No,
horseback charges.
The underground building on that game was so clunky, in my opinion, that it really put me off the game.
Oh, fair enough.
Putting down water supplies and stuff underground, the UI didn't really work for it.
Yeah.
And I also didn't think it really needed that to make the game be good. It was a level they added on top of it. They've taken it out for the new one, and
SimCity
2000
had sewers and underground tunnels, but it wasn't an extensive part of the thing. SimCity 2000 is pretty much the perfect version. That's why I've never really been that interested in any further versions.
Yeah.
What more can you add to that
game?
It's
probably available on Steam or Origin or wherever, Good Old Games.
Yeah.
But I don't have internet, so...
No.
Yeah. I've got a CD of it somewhere.
One lost customer there.
I know, terrible, really. Yeah, so going out without the internet, it's been gone for some number of weeks, I can't tell you anymore. Mm. It's all blurred into one because I've had to do stuff.
Good job you hate MMOs, really.
Well, I hate them even more now.
Yeah.
But I have been highly productive in the meantime, coding stuff. So
fair enough.
It's not all bad.
You're coping.
I'm coping. Next, I watched a film.
Okay, let's do a film review. Why not?
I watched a film called Inception. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I've seen it.
Yes.
Actually, it's a film I've seen before you.
I know.
Which is quite rare.
It's been sitting on my shelf since it came out on Blu-ray. I hadn't got around to watching it. I finally got around to watching it.
I think I saw it for £3 next to a supermarket checkout or something about a year ago. So
yeah, I may have paid more for the Blu-ray than that and not watched it. Anyway, everyone knows the plot.
Maybe.
Going to dreams, yada, 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 different levels, yada, yada, yada. What's really going on, yada?
Are you sure you are a podcastee on a movie review podcast with a spiel like that?
It's after 99.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. Anyway.
And the last film.
So basically, Leonardo DiCaprio leads a little ragtag band of scientists who use in a made-up future technology to invade people's dreams. They do this to extract commercial secrets from high-ranking businessmen, and they're hired for one last job, and they put a team together, and the idea is that they're hired to do an inception, which is the idea of creating an idea in the victim's head in order to fulfill this big corporate contract. And the idea of inception is incredibly difficult because it's very difficult to trick people into thinking you have to trick the person into thinking the idea was their own idea in the first place. And so there's all sorts of layered dream invasions and lots of very classy action gunplay and charging around in vehicles and
some really nice effects.
Some nice effects, yeah, and some very glossy set pieces and so on. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Problem I have with it is it's a Christopher Nolan film.
Yes,
and
enough of Batman and stuff.
Discussing it afterwards on Twitter, it clarified in my mind that I don't particularly like his films.
Mm.
They look stunningly brilliant, and I love the style. Mm. It's just they all are a little bit flat and a little bit antiseptic and a little bit, I don't know, they just don't go deep enough.
There's more style than substance, you think? Well, I don't know. I mean, Inception is an incredibly cerebral film. I mean, yes, okay, you could see some of it coming, but it's a lot more complicated and involved than your average, well, Batman, for example. Okay,
the last Batman, a film, again, which I didn't particularly care for.
Yeah, yeah.
The reasons for that should be obvious.
I remember seeing some stuff. I'm a big fan of TV Tropes website, and I was reading a load of stuff about Inception on there. And apparently this was a film that Nolan really wanted to make.
Yeah.
But it was such a sort of risky and unusual proposition that there was no way he was going to get any money until he'd done a few blockbuster Batman
things. Yeah, he did a few blockbusters and made then, the deal so that
I get to make a film I want to make. And Inception was one of these.
It's stunningly well. Made a hell of a lot of money.
I liked it. Yeah.
It's not a bad film. It's just it didn't grab me, and no one in it I really cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're
not meant to care about DiCaprio's.
Of the characterization could have been a bit more elaborate. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the business with Mal there and so on. I don't know.
I will say I really like DiCaprio in it.
He's quite an accomplished actor these days. Instead of
ever since he stopped being the next big
boy
thing,
Titanic
pretty boy guy and decided to be a real actor.
Yeah,
I really like.
Was it Catch Me If You Can? Him and Tom Hanks.
Yeah,
that was very good.
That was good.
I haven't seen The Aviator. I must get around to watching that some point.
Downstairs.
Righto, I'll have to give that a borrow.
Think about this, but yes. Anyway, I really like his work, and I like everyone in it was good. There's some
soundtrack's fantastic as well. Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, the soundtrack's good.
Riffing I've forgotten what it's called now. Ginevra Rien?
Yes.
That's the sort of seed for most of the orchestral
the
work.
The only problem
with
it is the goddamn Inception noise. if this film has given us anything, it's ruined every single trailer ever.
Bwam, bwam. Yeah. Fantastic.
Rubbish.
No, but it's very important because it ties in with what goes on in the film. There's a reason for it.
Yeah, and now it's in every other film. What does that mean?
It's very clever. But once you start to understand what that noise means and you hear it everywhere else, you start to freak out a bit.
Yeah. I like the fact that all Hollywood's being all ironic, but I don't think they are. I think they just like the noise.
Yeah, some good music. We'll have that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good film. It's very well put together. It looks stunning.
But you're just
highly
picky.
I love the idea, but I'm highly picky, and it just didn't draw me in. It didn't really.
I recommend it. I think it's an interesting cerebral action flick, which you don't often see.
I instantly started thinking about Moon while watching it.
I haven't seen that, so don't spoil or anything.
Haven't you seen Moon?
No, I know. I'm quite sheltered. and spend most of my time playing computer games.
I'll have to lend you... Okay.
Do say if you'd like to hear more movie reviews on here, dear
listener. No, we're going to do Moon as a movie review.
I'll go and watch them.
I've actually got a stack of movies which I've been putting off giving you.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of them are quite spoilerific and have big twists and things, I imagine.
Most movies do.
Yeah, which I... My sheltered upbringing protects me from those being spoiled, but I do need to do my part and actually see them at some point.
Well, considering I know somebody who doesn't know the twist to Planet of the Apes. Expect he may know the twist. Mm. He doesn't know he knows the twist. Because if it's on the cover, it's not a twist.
All right, since we're talking audiovisual entertainment, what is not computer games, I would like to talk about Black Mirror.
Go on, then.
The series is now finished. We had the three episodes there. Is it just the three?
Just the three, yes.
Okay, so...
Now available on DVD, I believe.
Yeah, okay. And I guess we won't see more of that until next season, next series or
something. I don't know if it's been renewed.
I don't know.
Or recommissioned, I should say.
So what did we think? What do we think? There were the three episodes then. There was Be Right Back, the first one, which was about the dead boyfriend.
Yes, and which was completely ruined for Charlie Brooker by the fact that straight after, everyone, including me maybe, tweeted him with the company which is actually doing this.
He did a piece in The Guardian. I was reading about it. It's actually quite a really good... I liked that episode.
Did too.
It was quite classy, quite professional, quite high quality and quite emotive as well, you know, exploring the idea that basically all of us are so obsessed with social media now that technology might exist in a distant future where you could essentially be a chatbot of you can be reconstructed from all the things you've put online. And this basically then gets taken further and further during the course of the drama there to its natural conclusions and so on, and I liked it. I thought I was having trouble thinking. I was watching this thinking, is this written by that sweary bloke off BBC Two? But it's a really sensitive and intriguing piece. I quite liked it.
Yeah, it's about the nature of love and loss and
But also
coping mechanisms,
social media, and what constitutes as us. What could we be replaced? What would happen? But and then I saw a piece in The Guardian where he was lamenting that within about a couple of days of that being broadcast, people were getting in touch with him saying this service exists and here is the website.
They don't take it to the full conclusion.
Well, obviously,
show,
it's very quite thought provoking one that.
I like that.
So
I like the twist at the end.
The twist,
the ending.
The ending.
The way it resolved.
So the second one I thought was the most powerful. That's White Bear.
Yes.
The symbol and everything, which really starts as quite a powerful dystopian, is it ontological mystery? Basically, you wake up in a room, you have no memory, the main character doesn't remember anything, trying to puzzle out what the hell's going on with the world, and it's quite a nasty sort of world that she's woken up into as well. She's in a housing estate, there are people chasing her with guns, and whilst
hunting her, and there's also everyone around her is pointing their phones at her.
Just pointing phones at and recording it, but not interacting with her, just ignoring her in person as well. And that was really quite an uncomfortable and terrifying feel that
and
was built
without getting into any spoilers as it progresses and we find out what's going on, it really becomes something a lot more.
That was really harsh when there was a sort of resolution of sorts and it moved into a different place, and that place was just as uncomfortable but in different ways as well. That was a really quite powerful and quite unsettling episode. I found that probably the best one, to be honest.
Yeah, I did
just too. Because of that really shocking reaction and it's not entirely beyond the realms of possibility as well, which was the horrifying thing. The sort of fridge logic, you sort of go away afterwards and think, hang on a minute, you know, it's just really...
It's got something of the tabloid overreaction
It could happen.
Things.
Yeah, yeah. And so the third one was... Oh, I've forgotten the name of it now. It was... The Waldo Moment.
Oh, yes.
Which is essentially where a sort of hip animated cartoon character being animated in real time with computer technology and a puppeteer and voice and everything.
A TV show which really wasn't based on one of Charlie Brooker's TV shows. So I think actually the animated puppet was actually Jimmy Carr.
It's possible. But just the idea... So it's a sort of one of these cutting-edge... topical political comedy satire shows invented in world, and it has this animated character, and basically the animated character, through sort of an increasingly bonkers and obsessed TV producer, gets thrust more and more into political limelight and ends up standing in a by-election against a Tory candidate and everything. That was a bit more absurd, and I thought the characterisation could have gone more places there.
It could have, yes.
The sort of the puppeteer behind it having depression and so on. And
it was his definitely the weakest
with the Labour
of the three.
Candidate. And
I didn't find the ending that interesting, but the idea behind it on what...
what celebrity does to politics, yes, and democracy.
And how things can be used.
Certainly interesting ideas, but perhaps not as developed as fully. I don't know. It's all right, but I definitely think White Bear was the most interesting of the three. So, yeah.
Yeah, so they're probably out on DVD by now. And the first season is also going to be available.
I think we touched on that in the show a long time ago.
Do not get put off about pigs and what prime ministers may have to do to pigs. It is
I'd almost forgotten about that.
Yeah.
The first three were very good, though. Yeah. But you have to sort of give them a bit of distance and try and sort of appreciate them from somewhat afar.
I don't know what the availability is outside of the UK.
Mm.
If you see anything called Black Mirror on TV, wherever you are, watch it.
They're very good, yeah. The sort of tales of the unexpected for the internet
age. It might
be
on BBC America or somewhere, I don't know.
Mm. So, okay, what did you learn this week?
I learnt that March instantly turns into spring.
And I learnt that I didn't do nearly as badly in my last job interview as I thought.
Yes, well done on that.
Yay me. So, do you want to do your spiel?
Yes, you can follow us on Twitter as John Cheesh and Van Hemlock.
Hello.
You can grab me on just about any gaming service there is as Senyek.
Mm-hmm.
You can catch my other podcast, which is moving on. This week we did Wing Commander.
You've been talking about that for a long time. You've finally gotten around to doing it.
Yeah.
Excellent. I shall go away and listen to what you thought. I know what you think about that, but I'd be interested to see what everyone
films
else
ever
thinks.
Made.
Mm-hmm.
I was not exactly agreed with.
Yeah, checks and balances working well then. Good.
Yes. We got a new host who is awesome and way better than me, so I'm going to have to do something about him.
Oh, dear.
Yes, you can also go onto iTunes, give us a review.
Mm-hmm.
Your reviews are helpful, and we do actually read them. This is why I found out somebody's written a review since I last checked.
Right.
Said something that I would have to react to now, and it makes it look I don't read them. But...
No, you lost me there.
No. And also you can... no, actually, I've got nothing on that one, have I?
Fair enough.
I've done it again. I've got one too many.
Yeah. See you next time.
Goodbye.